Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're going to meet another of the remarkable and inspirational thought leaders at the forefront of innovation that UBS supports and celebrates through its Global Visionaries programme. This time, it's Sam Gregory, programme director at Witness, an innovative non-profit that makes it possible for anyone, anywhere, to use video and technology to protect and defend human rights. Sam, who teaches human rights and participatory media as an adjunct lecturer at the Harvard Kennedy School, has worked extensively with human rights activists, particularly in Latin America and across Asia. Sam Gregory, welcome to the programme. It's great to have you with us. Let's start by talking a bit about how Witness advances the human rights agenda. Tell us a bit about the Witness mission and how it works.
Witness's mission is simple but broad, which is we want to enable anyone anywhere to use video and technology for human rights. And what that means in practical terms is how do we build on a number of the massive technological shifts that have happened in the last decade in the service of more people standing up for their rights. So we're looking at how we tap into the pervasiveness of mobile phones, the spread of mobile and broadband internet, and how that's led many more people to have the ability to share their reality, document abuse, and to advocate for change. And so what we do is we work very closely to support the many more people who now have the chance to use these tools to share their reality. So we work in pretty much every region of the world, from the US through Latin America, Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. And the first thing we do is we listen very closely to what people are trying to do already. So how are people using these incredibly powerful devices in their pockets to show what's happening, as, for example, people did in Syria during the Civil War, or people have done in marginalized communities in the US to show police violence, or in communities in Latin America to show how they've been forced from their land. And then we work out how they could more effectively use the tools. Is it the skills they need in order to show what's happening in a more convincing or a more evidentiary way? Is it tools they need that will help make their content stronger or help protect their identity if they're standing up and will face risks? Or is it the way in which they interact with the big platforms they use? Pretty much everyone we work with is using Facebook and YouTube and WhatsApp. So how can we make sure those platforms are really supportive of this incredibly important dimension of civic journalism and personal witnessing that their platforms and these technologies enable?
You talk about this idea of sort of citizen journalism, this democratizing power that the technology has. But you did also there mention some of these big platforms. And I guess my next question would be about some of these big companies, the big tech players. Is your work them about campaigning in character? Is it sort of almost like lobbying them? Because one might imagine that they, for various different reasons, might be more skeptical or more reserved, more cautious perhaps than many of the citizen participants.
It's complicated, and it's got more complicated because those platforms are under tremendous pressure. We've seen how they've been misused for propaganda. They're used for extremist recruiting. We have the phenomenon of so-called fake news. At the same time, at the heart of those platforms, many of the people who built them, who developed the products, who set the policies, also believe in this tremendous potential they have to enable more people to have a voice, to be a part of a global society and their own society. We're not leading big campaigns. What we actually do is we listen really closely to what communities who are almost the canaries in the coal mine, these communities of human rights defenders, of civic journalists on the ground, are doing with these tools. And then we bring that information back to the companies and say, look, it's important you enable these people to do what they're doing because they play a tremendously important role as watchdogs in their societies, in promoting a vigorous, vibrant civic space. And they're also these canaries in the coal mine for broader issues. So I'll give you an example. Is we worked bringing feedback, and this began initially during the early days of the Syrian uprising and the democracy movement there. We saw many individuals who were sharing very courageous stories from the streets, and they weren't hiding their faces, and we wondered why that was. You know, they were putting themselves at tremendous risk, and it turned out in that situation, as in many others, people simply didn't know how to do that. They knew that they were exposing themselves when they shared their videos onto YouTube and other spaces, but they had no idea how to blur their face out or to blur the face of someone who was at risk. And so we took that feedback as well as the experience in many other areas to YouTube and said, look, there's an opportunity here to both better support people who are the watchdogs, the people calling out for change in a whole range of societies, but who face great risk at doing this. And also more broadly, how do we help people have a greater right to privacy in a visual age? And so we were able to engage with them to build a tool to blur faces, which served the people we care most about, these really high-risk civic journalists and human rights defenders, but also is valuable to other people who might say, wait a second, I don't want to expose the faces of all my child's schoolmates in a school trip because their parents don't want them all over YouTube, but I want to share what happened when they took the trip to the zoo. And so often we're making that argument to companies to really to think about the dual high public interest context, but also the broader public. And then, you know, sometimes we're vigorously pushing back, you know, and a really good example of that recently would be YouTube took down hundreds of thousands of videos from YouTube that were evidence of war crimes. And they were tough videos to watch, but they'd been shared by courageous groups on the ground who said, look, I'm sharing this as evidence. And as YouTube tried to respond to pressures around violent extremism, which I appreciate, they ended up using an AI-driven approach that took hundreds of thousands of these videos down, losing this incredible archive that will lead to accountability. And there we've been publicly vocal as well as worked with them to think about what are solutions that can take place at a product and policy level to really address something like that.
Sam, a slightly tangential point to that about, I guess, the pace of change in this space. Have you been surprised by the speed and the alacrity with which people have tried to abuse this? And I'm talking, I guess, now about misinformation, disinformation, fake news. You already mentioned that before. Are you confident that you can sort of keep pace with those challenges?
We're in a moment right now where I think it feels like the emphasis on the internet is on the negative side. So it's, as you say, the sense that there's misinformation and disinformation. There is the piling on phenomenon of online harassment. And there's the way that governments are taking the strategies that were often developed by the civil rights movements in countries and using them against dissidents and communities trying to speak up. We've always emphasized that it's what you're trying to build on here is building on the community activism that exists already, and the technology enables that. So what that means is, yes, you have to adapt to the changes that are happening. And so communities need to learn how to practice digital self-defense as they share their stories online. They need to know better how to make their content more trustworthy as people start to question it. So you need to think how to adapt your skills and your tactics as you move forward. And it also becomes really important how you engage with the platforms. And it's why we do the two things, really supporting in any given year about 1 million people with the skill sets at a grassroots level, but also engaging the platforms, as platforms feel tremendous pressure to respond to the negative issues. And so you can see how a response to, for example, fake news might say, let's only try and emphasize, you know, really authoritative news sources like the New York Times or the Guardian or the Spiegel. Well, the consequence of that for citizen journalism is you might lose all of that as the collateral damage of that approach. And so it's really important. That's where our advocacy to platforms comes in, is to say, look, be really careful. Let's not lose the vitality, even as we take good responses to the problematic elements.
Sam, I wanted to ask you about the UBS Global Visionaries. You are one such, and we've spoken to one or two on our program, which is always a privilege to hear from them firsthand, how they're waging the particular campaigns that they feel most passionately about. Can I ask you what the Global Visionaries campaign and partnering with institutions, whether it's like UBS or others, what those partnerships mean? Does that afford you support? Is it about spreading the message? Is it about resources that maybe about the tools you need, talking to other people who understand those challenges that are techno-social, I think was the expression you used in character. What does those partnerships mean for you?
We're an interesting organization because we're at that intersection of technology and media and human rights. And what that means is that we try and find the partnerships that cut across our work. And so what the Global Visionaries has been interesting in terms of is I guess sort of three elements. One is, you know, we're still a relatively small organization. We're always struggling for resources and for expertise. So leveraging the internal capacity of a company like UBS that has smart, talented people working on things like design and how to engage audiences is tremendously valuable. So there's a resource leveraging question. And then the other one is trying to think about how we connect to the mainstream of the communities we're engaged with. So the mainstream mainstream of the technology community, right? Where we are leveraging technology to support marginalized communities, to protect these civic journalists and human rights defenders. To do that, we need to really be talking to the people who also build technology at scale, who are thinking in startups. And so that's been another space where UBS has been trying to think how to connect us to the people they work with in that space and the public spaces where we can talk about that and reach people who probably were never expecting to hear about how human rights defenders use these tools in our pockets.
And Sam, just finally, if we cast an eye to the future, I guess a lot of what you've already been speaking to us about speaks to the pace of change, the requirements for technology to catch up, and you've sort of painted a broad brush picture of the changing nature of the challenge. But what if I asked you to look, I don't know, down the line, medium term, say, what do you think the most important things for you and your colleagues to focus on? What would you sort of ask people to maybe think about? You know, what should have prominence when people talk about addressing, recording, addressing, and hopefully ending human rights abuses?
I remain optimistic that we can move forward with many more people feeling they can be part of human rights solutions. I think historically there's been a sense that it's kind of a task that is passed off to the lawyers or to Amnesty or Human Rights Watch. And at the heart of what we believe is that, you know, many more people can show what's happening, can mobilize maybe just the people next door with what they film and share, maybe people halfway across the world. And although at the moment it can feel pessimistic in the world, right? It feels like we have, you know, a rising authoritarianism, a rising populism. The ability that's continuing to grow of many more people to be able to show what's happening to them, to advocate to others near or far around what's happening is critical. So I'm optimistic that we're moving towards that. I think that optimism has to be balanced by saying, what is it going to take to make a more positive vision of that? Many more people as witnesses, and in our ideal vision as our mission captures, is anyone anywhere is able to be a witness to what is wrong in their society, is you have to really think at these multiple levels, which is what does anyone need to know in order to film if they happen to witness a hate crime or an incident of violence or an injustice? There's a skills level. And I think we're only just touching the edge of what it means to be an effective witness, both as someone who documents something they see, but also shares it as they encounter it online. And then I think the other levels of these questions of what do the tools enable, right? So we need to keep thinking about tools that enable people to be protected and safe and anonymous when they need to share something and trusted when they need to share something publicly. And so really, you know, those elements of safety and trust and how we reinforce those where there are many more people out there and there are bad actors are important. And then, of course, so much of this also depends on governments not coming up with reflexive responses to this or reactive responses to, you know, some of the big problems out there like extremism and fake news, but really thinking consciously about how they protect this greater public sphere. And the companies doing the same, they have a responsibility. Governments are going to push them to a place. If we're not careful, that'll be a place that's not helpful for a greater diversity of voice. And my hope is that companies will recognize that role, that seeing and hearing how their tools play out, they will adapt them. And if that doesn't work, they'll also understand and respond to, you know, a growing public pressure that wants to defend this space.
Thanks, Sam. And that was Sam Gregory, bringing us to the end of this special edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. You can find out more about the work of Sam and Witness and other global visionaries in the UBS programme. Head to ubs.com and search Global Visionaries. In the meantime, listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.